Today, more compelling evidence relating to bank branch closures. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, my latest post covering finance and property news. This is the third section of evidence provided to the hearing on Friday relating to bank branch closures. And Dale Webster, the journalist, took stage and went through some of the critical issues, specifically around issues relating to what the data actually says and the way the data is actually used.
You've been very helpful with lots of information and glad to be able to welcome you this morning. For the record, could you please state your full name and the capacity in which you appear?
Dale Webster. I'm an independent journalist researching specifically at the moment on regional bank closures.
Great, fantastic. We have your opening statement, and as you might have heard me say to others, we are really compressed timelines. It'd be great if you could, if you do have an opening statement, make it really, really brief so we have time for questions too. Thank you.
Yeah. Look, I was told that. I've written it up. What I might do is just leave out the section on the APRA data because it is complex and you do have a lot of information on that and it's in the opening statement. So give you a really quick rundown on how I got into this. I was a journalist covering regional bank closures in what I call the second wave of regional closures that started about 2015-16. I was really sad when you're reporting on an issue like this, you see so many people who are just so desperate to get an outcome from these stories, and I just knew that there was nothing that they could do and nothing that I could write that would make an iota of difference at a local level. So I spent a lot of time thinking about if there was a national impact to so many banks closing across such a vast geographical area. And my story, published in 2021, Big Four Banks Casting a Dangerous Shadow, is the result. Cutting a very long story very short, in a nutshell, I found there was a strong argument that the lack of banks in regional Australia, coupled with the fact that there was more cash in circulation in Australia at any point in our history, and led to the banking desert with thriving cash economies. And this isn't by choice, it's by necessity. Banks just continue to vanish and the distance between them just is growing wider and wider. I tried to contact the Reserve Bank and talk to the researchers of a report on cash and hoarding cash. They weren't interested. But officially, they'll tell you that the missing cash is being hoarded. But when we press them on it, they say it comes in and out of hoarding. And they can't track when this occurred. So my interpretation of this is that they've basically got no idea where the cash that they classify, whether the cash that they classify as hoarded is buried in a tin in the ground, as most people sort of assume hoarding is, or whether it's moving around towns in these banking deserts. The reason they don't know where this money is out in regional Australia is one of the main ways that they had of tracking cash was bank deposits and withdrawals. And that is no longer an attractive option when it's a 600-kilometre round trip or more to the next closest branch. I see the Reserve Bank's up this afternoon, and I'm curious to know, I've been thinking a bit more about this and how this spending in regional areas is impacting on inflation, whether it's even being considered. And if it's not being considered, why not? The last time I checked, the number was more than 90 billion banknotes in circulation. Michelle Bullock is blaming inflation in part on money spent on sporting events and recreation in the media. You heard at the WA hearing that people are having to take annual leave to travel to a bank to get the cash to run weekly footy or the local show. And I didn't hear anyone saying that they were taking another day off to travel back and bank the take-in. In fact, there's a lot of people telling you that there's money coming over the counter in their shops and they're having to use it to fill up their ATM. So it's a constant cycle of people taking, spending money and then it's sort of being fed back into a cash cycle. So this is where I was going to talk about the ARPA data, but we'll skip that. I just want to share some fact-checking I did on after the September hearing. There's one thing that in particular that really got my goat. ANZ CEO Shane Elliott told the inquiry ANZ had teamed up with researchers from the University of South Australia to understand the impact of digital services on older Australians. And that they found, and I quote, most older Australians like and accept the online banking environment, and that Australians over 65 are responding in line with younger cohorts in adopting digital banking. Took a lot of digging to find this, but I found the report that Mr. Elliott refers to, and most older Australians was actually 46 people who lived in Adelaide and Melbourne. I can also reveal at the time, ANZ was in the process of settling a complaint with the Human Rights Commission over its use of power of attorney documents as a workaround when elderly customers can't navigate the bank's call centre system or access a branch, but they're still fully able to make banking decisions otherwise. One of the outcomes of this agreement was that a conversation would be had at board level about the treatment of elderly customers. This provides a segue into a final point I want to make, which is about the human rights benchmark at the University of Sydney has developed for financial institutions. I've only just found out about this, but from what I've read, one of the categories they've assessed was the treatment of customers. In their first assessment, all four of the big banks scored the lowest possible rating for treatment of customers, a red line. To quote the researchers, really want you to take this in. The banks think that they can manage the optics. No one will ask the questions and dive into the data and see what is actually happening. What is missing is board high governance responsibility for human rights. They can fund the footy team and they can support children's cancer research, but it doesn't excuse or balance out what they're doing in their own day-to-day business activities. This is from the Law Department of Sydney University. I'd like to table that report and the individual assessments for ANZ, CBA, NAB and Westpac for your consideration, because no one but the banks are benefiting from these closures of their actions. As you've been hearing all over Australia, it's causing harm to individual regional businesses and, as I've shown with my research, possibly even the national economy. During COVID lockdowns, Anna Bligh fought for the banks to be recognised as essential services. Please don't forget that the last time that the Senate looked at regional bank closures 20 years ago, Penny Wong said if the bank's behaviour did not improve and they didn't stop pulling services out of regional areas, Labor was prepared to re-regulate them. Another third of the regional Big Four banking network has gone since then, with numbers now down to less than 1,000 branches. We're almost heading towards under 900. That's down from about 2,500, 3,000 in 1975. The only thing standing in the way of losing the rest is this inquiry. So you have a lot of hope resting on your shoulders. But thank you.
Thanks very much for that, Ms. Webster. Thanks again for all the information. In your submission to us, or the various submissions, you make the point that that there seems to be a classification issue with regional and metro areas in the APRA data, and I think, and I'm just trying to find the reference, you accused one of the banks of taking advantage of that. I just can't remember which one. Could you just try and... I just can't quite understand that, because I thought the APRA data uses just the ABS geographic classification of Australia, but what's this particular issue with the geographic definition?
So APRA uses, as you said, the ABS classification of major cities. But the major cities classification lumps the metro areas in with regional Australia's major regional cities, so Wollongong, Newcastle, Geelong, as well as the Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast. I think most people I know would classify any of those places as regional Australia, including the Commonwealth Bank that declared that the Gold Coast was the fastest growing regional destination, I think it was last year and the year before. But when it came to honouring that moratorium, they chose to go with the APRA classification, which was that it was a metro area and that it was not doing anything wrong by closing branches on the Gold Coast. I think morally that's a...
Okay. I think I understand it now then. I suppose your issue to a certain degree is with the ABS data then. I mean, ABS hasn't classified Gold Coast as regional.
They don't use the word regional.
Yeah.
It's major cities. So when you ask for regional data from anyone, you're getting major city data back. People are talking apples and oranges, sort of.
Look, it's always hard to define. Often these sort of areas do qualify for regional grants from here, and often that's quite the frustration of myself and others in the Nationals Party who would consider Gold Coast pretty well served compared to the areas we live. But, I at least understand the point. It's a fair one.
It's not an insignificant point. I looked at it yesterday, and there's probably about 220 bank branches that are caught up in this grey area of definition.
Yeah. Have you been involved at all? I believe APRA is reviewing their point of presence data at the moment. Have you made submissions to them or had any consultation with them about this inquiry they're doing?
I have given them the same submission as I gave you, and I haven't heard a word from them.
Are they holding hearings or anything like that? How are they running it apart from taking submissions?
I wouldn't have a clue.
Okay, you haven't heard from them otherwise.
No information coming out from APRA about it whatsoever.
All right. I might just explore. I've got other questions, but given the time, we'll go to Senator Roberts and then I'll come back at this time.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ms. Webster, for participating. And I want to thank you for your research and your articles and your data. You really have been doing a great job holding banks accountable. Could you elaborate, please, on the Digital Inclusion Index?
A very important piece of work for all of the senators working on this inquiry. To be really quick and really succinct, it reveals that a third of Australians, not just regional Australians, can't do internet banking. Like it's a university study. 7 million Australians, I think it was the number, that are excluded from the digital world, and that is for either, for a myriad of reasons. It may be, their age, the inability to use digital services. It may be connectivity, but it's a very, very significant number. So with banks pushing people, everyone, onto digital banking, and you've still got that number of people unable to use it and needing face-to-face bank services, it's clearly a welfare issue.
Thank you. Does your submission, I haven't read your submission, does it cite the reference for that study?
No, it's something that I've come across later, but if you go back and read, I haven't had a chance to have a look at this inquiry submissions in depth, but if you have a look at the Regional Banking Task Force submissions, it's quoted over and over again, and particularly from states that have connectivity problems like Queensland and South Australia, I think, mentions it. In this inquiry submissions, it's quoted by distinction of actually receiving a submission from signed by a state premier, which was Tasmania, and he quotes the Digital Inclusion Index as an important factor.
Thank you. Could you tell us more about something you touched on in your opening comments or your opening statement, the ANZ survey showing older people like online banking? I think you said that involved just 46 people in Adelaide.
Yes. There's not a lot to be said. It's, it was... It's quite brazen, I think, of Shane Elliott to refer to that study in the way he did in this inquiry. And as the researchers from the University of Sydney said, the banks are good at managing the optics, but they just don't expect people to go into detail and check the facts and get into the data and have a look. And it took me quite a while. That report was not freely available. It took quite a bit of digging. To be used in an inquiry that is, in your terms of reference, you specifically reference welfare, to use that inquiry and those results in the way that they did in this inquiry, I think, is morally questionable.
Okay, thank you. Speaking of morally questionable, what's your view on APRA's points of presence data?
From a user perspective, and journalists are routinely pointed to this data whenever they ask a bank about bank numbers, branch footprints, anything like that. It is, even without the mistakes, it was completely useless. And it was at a point where to write about this subject in detail, I had to compile my own data. And it took a year. It was a big effort, but it is certainly possible to put together an accurate list of Australia's banks and where they are. The problem with the APRA data is it doesn't tell you where what bank is in which town. So it masks. The banks are able to mask their footprint. From a journalism point of view, it's useless. And it's really, it's almost heartbreaking to see all the reports that come out after the points of presence data was released this year. It's wrong. Like they were very careful how they worded it, but there's an issue over the definition of what a bank branch is. And when you take tellers and cash service out of a bank, which ANZ and NAB are doing, I think the others are starting, and become cashless banks, as one journalist said to me the other day, was asking me about fake banks, and I think that's probably a really good term to describe them. It gets really complicated. So APRA can't actually tell you, if you ask them later this morning or this afternoon, how many banks closed in Australia last year, which was the job it was given 20 years ago by a similar inquiry to yours, they can't answer truthfully. They don't know. I've asked them this. I asked them this last month. How many have closed? And they don't track it. They can tell you how many have been closed and reclassified, but they because banks have had to downgrade. If they've taken tellers out, that they're no longer legally, in the eyes of government data legislation, they are no longer a bank branch. So at the moment, you can't look at that data and see what the definition the difference is. So it's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Okay, thank you. You also alluded to a thriving cash...
Last question.
Yeah.
All right, two more. No,
that's all right. The banks, Ms. Webster, are politically connected throughout government through the MPs. Do you think regulations... We're told we're highly regulated, but it seems to me the regulations protect the banks because small businesses, individuals, farmers... haven't got the resources, haven't got the legal, haven't got the money to pay for the legal defence or legal prosecutions that are needed to hold the banks accountable. And they haven't got any real competition because they dominate. They're essentially, as I see them, one large bank with similar shareholdings, controlling shareholdings in BlackRock and Vanguard that operate behind four different logos. So have they got too much power and do we need more competition?
As a journalist, I probably it's not the question for me. I'd have a personal opinion. I would like to see the banks regulated properly. I think the banking code of conduct needs to be taken out of their hands and put into an independent arbitrator. It's how they've been allowed to take so many banks out of regional areas and leave towns and people, you know, just scrabbling. I don't know how they've been allowed to do this.
Okay.
Without some oversight.
Okay, last question. You alluded to a thriving cash market or largest cash circulation in Australia's history going on right now. Should the banks have a commercial or community service obligation that they must provide service across the country? The big four banks.
I don't think you'll find many people that would disagree with that.
Thank you, Chair.
I think the banks would be the only people that would disagree that a community service obligation is preparing.
Thank you, Ms. Webster.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Roberts. I just quickly before we go, Ms. Webster, you did raise some issues about cash, and I think some of the points you're making probably go a little bit beyond our terms of reference in regards to inflation, what have you. But is your contention that, I just want to check because we've got the RBA later, are you saying that the RBA doesn't know how much cash is in circulation in Australia? And I suppose, I presume they don't know it down to the cent, but is that you're saying there's something materially wrong with their estimates, and if so, why?
No, they know exactly how much is out there. They just don't know where it is and what people are doing with it.
Right.
Okay. And they admit that.
They wouldn't know that. That's effectively the velocity of money. They don't know, and it is impossible to estimate. Well,
but they have,
to measure directly.
My contention is that they have less of an idea than they used to, because one of the main ways that they could track it was money going in and out of banks. And people aren't using banks in regional Australia across vast areas anymore because they don't have them.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Webster. If there is no other questions, we thank you again. Again, thank you for all the research you've provided to us. It's been very, very helpful. And enjoy the rest of your day.
So there you have it. Dale is consistent in her view, and I agree with her, that change needs to come and come quickly. Now we'll publish some further releases from the inquiry over the next few days. But if you stand back and think about what we heard from the LPO, from the Citizens Party, and from Dale herself, you can see here that there's a very compelling case for change. But I also think it's worth underscoring that the senators are beginning to get the point that the competitive landscape for banking in Australia is stacked in favour of the banks and against ordinary citizens, be they small businesses and consumers. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.